Welcome to the Metaphysical Martini Show, where wit and wisdom come together to bridge the gap between the spirit realm and the physical world.
With Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ani Avedisian. Welcome to Metaphysical Martini. Three parts spirit, one part rational mind. Add two drops of optimism, give it all a good hard shake and pour, dress it with the olives of grace and empathy. Sit back, sip slowly, and contemplate the wonder of cosmic co-creation. And a hearty hello to everyone out there. Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for joining this crazy old lady for yet another round of cocktails on this week's Metaphysical Martini, the show that tries to sort out what's true, what's woo, and what gets flushed down the loo. In a world so bonkers, so very mad and weird, the Khazarians and the Zionists want to see the whole world gutted and skewered. Will America take the bait? I think not, because this administration is about peace, not hate. Is Iran ready for a secular revolution? Oh my God, with bells on. It's time for the Ayatollah to not come any closer. I mean to say, honestly, people, could radical Islam become any grosser? And England is finally investigating the Islamic grooming and rape gangs. Those bastards should be torn apart by vicious animals with very large fangs. And last but not least, as we take down the beast, when will we the people partake of the feast? And by that I mean, end the IRS. End the IRS. Welcome back, martini heads. I raise my glass to you. You can't see me yet. I will be doing a video podcast going forward, but you can't see me. But here's me. Here's my glass. Cheers. I love you all. If you are joining us for the first time, a very warm welcome to you. Be advised, this show is politically incorrect, so as not to erode the intellect. Martini heads are simple folk. We believe in common sense, common courtesy, common decency. We believe America has a sacred purpose to unite the world and lead it into the new golden age, a higher vibration, one of self-realization, one of peace and unbridled prosperity. We are essentially spirit-centered patriots, and broadly speaking, we share a libertarian ideology with more than a little nod to conservatism, and our ideology is one of big soul sovereignty and teeny tiny government. We are not woke. We know the agenda behind the fake vaccine poke. We won't wear a face cloak. We don't do CRT or PC. And we don't care how you identify, as long as you stop shoving it down our throats. But there are only two genders, and people cannot be furry animals. You see, that requires a straitjacket and some heavy medication. You know, darlings, in case you have not figured it out yet, identifying as a furry is the cabal's way of preparing us for the normalization of bestiality, which is sexual relations between humans and animals, which is as sick as fuck for a human and most disrespectful to the poor animal. Poor old Rover, poor old Kitty, poor old Sally the cow. Yuck, what a dreadful thought. But that is the agenda, just as pedophilia is. You know, they tried to change that term to minor attracted person, but that won't fly in the new golden age. Because the new golden age is one of love, light, respect, common sense. And anyone who thinks that penetrating a 9-year-old is okay and that it should be legalized, you belong in a straitjacket along with the furry fantasy people. You can all share a nice padded cell and be given nourishing soups and pats on the head until you are ready to reclaim your minds from the bottom of the toilet. And what else can I tell you about this show and about the martini heads? Well, We do love a drinky poo from time to time. After all, darlings, metaphysical martini is where the Holy Spirit meets top shelf distilled spirits. Ooh, and what a wonderful combination that is. In fact, let me have a sip of today's luxurious libation and see if it's a winner or a sinner. Hold on, darlings, don't go away. Sipping is happening. I'll give you a little hint. It has grapefruit in it, and I don't care for grapefruit, but I'm trying to expand my boundaries. This is actually a lovely drink, and more about that towards the end of the show. What have we got today? I don't know. Let's get on with the show. I think on today's show, we will have a shorter than usual quack questions, answers, and comments, because most of the questions that came in this month are about the America First agenda, and that's what I want to concentrate on. And I think it'll be a two-parter, hopefully not a three-parter, but at least it'll be a two-parter because, you know, I don't know about you, but my attention span for a podcast is just about an hour. I tend to tune out if it goes beyond that, even if it's me, you know, and we all know I love the sound of my own voice. So without further ado, if you would like to share the magnificent morsels of your mind with martini heads across the whole globe and beyond, send your emails to me because nobody else will read them, Ani@aniabedissian.com, or you can snail mail to Cosmic Ani, P.O. Box 714, Wilsonville, Oregon 97070, USA. And don't forget to let me know if and how you wish to be identified, or I shall be forced to refer to you as omit personal details. And if you identify as a furry or something, don't even let me know that because I don't want to know. Let's shake up the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity and see what pops out. Shaky, shaky, I'm a shaking the fishbowl. Oh, all right, let's pick this one. This is from Leslie in Raleigh. Is that South Carolina? It's one of the Carolinas. And Leslie, who may or may not be female, I don't know, or male, writes, Ani, my liberal family are up in arms about the ICE raids. Yes, that's how clueless they are. They won't listen to me, but I found this blurb and discussed it with them. And lo and behold, and praise Jesus, they calmed down and started to listen. Well, I would praise Jesus for that too. So I'm going to read the blurb that Leslie found and read to her family because it's good, it's well written. But Leslie, you didn't give me the author. So if you could please drop me a line and tell me where you got this, as I would love to give the author credit. So here's what Leslie sent me, and credit to the anonymous author. When I find out who you are, I will credit you with bells on. Here we go. This is what changed Leslie's liberal family's mind. The recent raids carried out by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, have reignited a national debate. Are these operations an economic blow, as some argue, or a necessary step to restore the rule of law? President Donald J. Trump's administration has made it clear that the goal is not to punish the economy, but to rescue it from an unstable and unsustainable dependence. The mass employment of illegal immigrants in key sectors such as agriculture, food processing, construction, and services. And while the alarm bells ring from business lobbies and progressive groups, the reality is that behind this supposed fear and devastation lies an economic structure that has operated outside the law for decades. It is a broken economic model. Those who accuse the president of not understanding the economy forget that Donald Trump, as a businessman, understood better than anyone the value of law, efficiency, and order in economic growth. These raids are not a political whim. They are a necessary response to an informal economy that has become parasitic, relying on the vulnerability of millions who cross our borders illegally and work for rock-bottom wages, often without basic benefits. The narrative that the economy cannot function without illegal immigrants is not only troubling, it is offensive. It's an implicit admission that we have normalized exploitation and tax evasion as engines of growth. How can a sovereign nation sustain its economy on the constant breaking of its own laws? See, the media doesn't tell you about the rule of law. The media doesn't tell you what you need to know. Mainstream outlets have pushed dramatic images of so-called workers ripped from their jobs without mentioning that in many cases, employers were already under investigation for labor violations, fraud, tax evasion. These raids are not random. They are the result of in-depth investigations aimed not only at detaining those who are here illegally, but also at sending a clear message to those who exploit them. The devastation some speak of has more to do with the loss of economic privilege built on illegality than with any real structural crisis. If certain industries cannot survive without breaking the law, then the problem is not the raids, the problem is the model itself. Duh! So what's the alternative? How do we get through the legality, the investment, and the citizenship? Opponents of these measures often repeat that there aren't enough Americans willing to do those jobs. But they fail to talk about the conditions in which those jobs are offered. The truth is, many of these industries have stopped investing in innovation, automation, or better working conditions because hiring illegal workers is cheaper. The model not only degrades labor, it stunts the growth of the American working class. President Trump has reaffirmed his commitment to strengthening the legal immigration system, promoting a merit-based model rather than one built on illegal entry. Why aren't business leaders lobbying for legal guest worker visas? Why don't they push for reforms that allow them to hire with guarantees instead of defending illegals and illegality as a solution? It is possible to have an economy without illegal immigrants. In fact, it is essential. Contrary to critics' claims, an economy without illegal immigration is not a utopia. It's an achievable goal if we combine investment in technology, training for the domestic workforce, and immigration reform that rewards legality and genuine contribution to the country. What cannot continue is the double standard, demanding secure borders while profiting from their weakness. Those sectors now complaining about the raids should ask themselves, what have they done for years to change this model? What investments have they made to stop depending on the underground labor market? It's time businesses take responsibility and stop using fear as a shield. Order over dependency. The raids are not the problem. They are the reflection of a system broken by economic actors who, for years, profited from government silence. Now, with Trump back in the White House, that silence is over. America cannot thrive on exceptions. We need a strong economy, but also one that is lawful, transparent, and sovereign. Fear wasn't caused by the law. It was caused by the prolonged lie that this nation can only grow through illegality. Today, the message from the White House is clear. America first also means putting our citizens, our laws, and our dignity above any economic model built in the shadows. And that is a very well-written piece, and I really do thank Leslie for sending that in. Leslie, I would love to know who wrote that. I don't like to quote without giving credit. So drop me an email, please, Leslie, Ani@aniavedisian.com, and let me know. Wonderful. Let me have another sip of this drinky, just a little sip, a little tiny sip. Quite nice. Okay. Let's take another one. This is from Harper in Dallas, Texas, who says, what is your opinion of Charlie Kirk? What is my opinion of a Charlie Kirk? Well, that's a very short and to the point question. I like those. I have never met Charlie Kirk, but I have seen him in action many times. He is smart, he is clever, he is very well read, well informed, has a wonderful memory, and he is sincere. And I think he's done a great deal of good work reshaping young, troubled minds, getting them back on track. He is also a fervent Christian and a Zionist, and that is where we part ways. Because Jesus is not coming back, that is a silly notion. And the world is a bigger place these days than the tiny dot called Israel. Do any of the biblical adventures take place outside the Middle East, asking for a friend? This little tiny jot of land and its little environs there, they have been the sole focus of everyone's attention in world affairs. And yet, it's a bigger world out there. Do we not see the problem with this? Are we beginning to see the whole Zionist agenda if we really think about it? I have nothing against Charlie. I have much respect for him. He's welcome to have dinner with me anytime he wants. I will cook a lovely meal for him. And I am grateful for the truly heroic level of effort he has expended, listening to young university students talk bollocks all day long. I wouldn't do it. Not without a great deal of alcohol. But on those last two points, adherence to a religion and Zionism, we are dimensions apart. Religion, well, religions are stepping stones for babies. We are grown-ups now. We don't need training wheels. And one last quack for this show. And this is from Jane in Modesto, California. We seem to get a great deal of mail from Modesto, California. Isn't that something? Arnie, do you ever get depressed? I can't say that I do anymore. I have moments where I may crash for a short while, but I've trained myself, I don't allow myself to stay there. I have learned, to starve the ego, not feed it. And when I'm down, and it does happen, I remind myself that I am an individualized manifestation of unlimited cosmic energy. I remind myself that I co-created this world, and there is no reason for me to be defeated by my own creation. In fact, that would be rather embarrassing, and which is, of course, a manifestation of ego. That snaps me out of my funk very quickly. So try it. It works. And thanks to everyone who wrote in. I know it was a bit short this week, but I've got other stuff to get through. Quack is the reason we started this show, and it is usually the major part of the show. But with so much emphasis on America First, I feel we should deal with that for the next show or so. Now, my darlings, I set out to write a booklet on the subject of America First principles, and I made a jolly good start on that when a friend called me and said, "Hey, someone else already wrote that book, and you might want to check it out before you put too much effort into yours." So I thought, well, first of all, I was a bit pissed off because I thought, gosh, I'm already halfway through it. And then I thought, let me read it. It might be better than mine. And I am a little pushed for time these days, so I thought, if somebody's already written this, let's take a look at it. And indeed, somebody has written a wonderful little book called The America First Agenda, and it is written by a gentleman, I believe it is a gentleman, called P.G. Arnold, who is a very proud veteran, ex-military chappie. He has served his country with honor and distinction. And has a love for America that runs really deep. It's the kind of love that I call the founding fathers' love. And he's not somebody who sits and lectures people. I don't get that impression. I get the impression he really just wants people to be awake and self-aware. He wants people to really understand the rich tapestry of US history. And he wants people to be interested in that and take some pride in being American, and I can't really disagree with that. So the book is called The America First Agenda, Donald J. Trump's Comprehensive Plan to Restore Leadership, Sovereignty, and Prosperity for the United States and the World. And the author is initial P, initial G, and the last name is Arnold, Arnold. OLD, just like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And oh, by the way, I don't have a television and I certainly wouldn't watch a program like The View because I can't stand those women. But he was on there recently. I saw a little clip and they were really goading him, Arnold, you know, big Arnold with the big muscles, goading him into trashing ICE and trashing the raids. And what was beautiful was with the tact and grace and dignity that Arnold handled that. He started off by saying, you know, I was an immigrant into this country. I'm not going to do the accent, darlings. I can't. I was an immigrant into this country. I was 21. I had nothing except muscles. You know, America gave me everything. I had a career as a bodybuilder. I had a career as an actor. He was a dreadful actor, but never mind. I had a career as an actor. And then I became the governor of California, and I owe America everything. And at one point, one of the girls put their hand on his arm to try to get him to shut up. And he didn't react. He just kept going. He goes, you have to come here legally. If you're coming to this country for a better life to take what's good from it, what are you going to give back? It has to be done legally. So Arnold, you're off my hit list. Because when you told people to fuck their feelings and take the death jab, you got on my hit list. You are now off my hit list. So what are we going to discuss with this America's vision for the future? We're going to talk about the importance of strong leadership. We need to understand that America First is not just a slogan. P.G. Arnold, very eloquent, says it's a guiding philosophy that prioritizes the needs, rights and aspirations of American citizens. By focusing on sovereignty, economic independence and national security, this agenda seeks to place the United States firmly on the path of greatness once more. Huzzah! It recognizes the importance of securing American interests while fostering a global environment where nations respect one another's sovereignty. If we respect one another's sovereignty, we don't need to be isolationists. So he's really given us a roadmap. Well, Trump has given us a roadmap for a future where the American dream is not only alive, but thriving, and where that dream extends its influence to every corner of the world. It's not just about restoring what was lost. It's about creating a better, stronger future for all. Very well written, Mr. P.G. Arnold. In his book, you will discover all about immigration and border security, economic reforms, healthcare reimagined, energy and environmental policies, foreign policy, national security, social and cultural transformation, judicial and governmental overhaul, infrastructure and urban development, media and technology. He also discusses the military and the veterans, huzzah. Federal government and the workforce, trade and manufacturing, law and order, education, and other little addendums that might need to be reformed. And I'm not going to sit here and read the book to you, but please know that all of the information is coming from P.G. Arnold's book. Today, let's talk about immigration and border security. The integrity of America's borders is essential for maintaining national security and economic stability. This agenda prioritizes the completion of a robust border wall system equipped with advanced surveillance technologies such as drones, sensors, and thermal imaging cameras. Increased funding for border control agents will provide advanced training to improve their effectiveness, while additional resources like helicopters and patrol boats will cover challenging terrain and waterways. And then we'll have rapid response teams. They'll address surges in illegal crossings, ensuring swift and effective action. I don't know that we can overemphasize the importance of having a strong and secure border. If anyone doesn't understand this, why don't you just leave all the windows and the doors to your house open and let anybody who feels like it come in, eat your food, sleep in your bed, rape your children, give your children drugs, bonk your wife while they're at it, and steal all your stuff, and then walk away. That is an open border. You wouldn't want that for your house, would you? The people in Martha's Vineyard certainly didn't want it. I think they got rid of those illegals within 48 hours. So think about it when you talk about your altruistic, ooh, we must let everybody in. No, we don't. We vet people. We vet people. You know, we need to ensure a well-equipped and highly trained border security force, because otherwise the trafficking networks, the cartels, they're going to keep running the world and buying all the governments. The other thing he talks about is ending birthright citizenship. The policy of birthright citizenship, where children born on US soil automatically receive citizenship regardless of their parents' immigration status, has been a contentious issue, certainly. But this agenda proposes legislative and legal measures to limit birthright citizenship to children of US citizens and lawful permanent residents. And by addressing this loophole, the plan aims to deter unauthorized immigration and preserve the integrity of the nation's citizenship law. It is a good thing. Restricting birthright citizenship aligns the US with the policies of many other nations and reinforces the principle that citizenship is a privilege tied to lawful presence and allegiance to the country. This is no longer a money laundering operation, people. This is America, a country with its own developing culture. He also talks about strengthening the asylum process because it is overburdened, it is exploited, and it is very much in need of reform. He talks about combating visa overstays because that is a very big deal. It's a significant portion of the unauthorized immigrant population. So we have to do better with the implementation of an advanced entry exit tracking system to monitor visa holders and ensure timely departures. And there have to be serious consequences for overstaying your visa, because that will deter non-compliance. He talks about ending sanctuary cities, and I am all over that. If I can be on any committee or action force for that, I am all over that. A country cannot be at war with itself. And PJ says, PG, sorry, not PJ, PG, like PG tips, the English tea I like. Sanctuary cities undermine federal immigration laws, creating safe havens for individuals who have entered the country unlawfully. This plan proposes withholding federal funding from jurisdictions that refuse to cooperate with federal immigration authorities. Yes. States will be encouraged to adopt policies aligning with national immigration priorities to ensure consistency across jurisdictions. And countries like Australia and Canada serves as models in enforcing strict immigration policies that align federal and local efforts. So we have to end the sanctuary policies because they promote, we just have to do it for community safety. And this will also ensure accountability at all levels of government. My God, people, we have Democrat senators and representatives openly showing us that they're doing business with cartel members in these sanctuary cities. I mean, they're not even hiding it anymore. They are so invested now in people not finding out what they have done. It's too late. So he talks about modernizing the immigration system and ending chain migration. He says, chain migration allows individuals to sponsor extended family members for immigration, often bypassing merit-based criteria. This agenda proposes limiting family-based immigration to immediate family members, spouses, minor children, while increasing the number of merit-based visas to ensure that immigration serves the nation's economic and social interests. So reflect on how a merit-based immigration system might benefit local industries in your community. Ending chain migration prioritizes skilled workers, promotes economic prosperity, and aligns immigration policies with the nation's long-term goals. And last but certainly not least, combating human trafficking and drug smuggling. They're devastating consequences of a porous border. So this plan includes enhanced cooperation with international partners to dismantle trafficking networks and stricter penalties for those involved in these crimes. We need specialist task force who will target trafficking operations. We need increased support for victims, including shelter, counselling. Very specialised counselling is needed for people who have suffered at the hands of these cults. And of course, legal assistance. We have to put up our efforts. We have to really increase our efforts to combat trafficking. We've already saved thousands of lives. Thank you, Team Trump. So the immigration really is the very first thing that we want to tackle. Let's talk a little bit about the economic reforms, because as PG says, a strong economy is the foundation of a national prosperity. And of course, it has global influence. He wants to revitalize American industries through tariff policies. People don't really understand what tariffs do. That's why they complain against them. You know, the economic backbone of a nation lies in its industries and workforce. Unfair trade practices have long undermined American businesses. They're outsourcing jobs, eroding the domestic economy. And through a comprehensive tariff strategy, this plan aims to level the playing field, ensuring fair competition and incentivizing companies to invest within the United States. And the implementation of targeted tariffs will address predatory pricing practices by foreign competitors. It will protect key industries like steel and technology and discourage reliance on adversarial nations. And they will create a ripple effect, promoting businesses, actually prompting businesses to reinvest in domestic operations and ensuring long-term stability in the critical sectors. And it has a lot to do with prioritizing collaboration with allies to address global trade imbalances and ensure compliance with international trade agreements. It matters. Tariffs are more than just an economic tool. They are a declaration of sovereignty. And people, sovereignty is the word upon which we should all be pondering. The other part of that is to promote small business growth. With all of this corporatization and centralization, we have forgotten that we started off as a nation of small farmers and small holdings and small businesses. You can't have community development without small business. So Trump has a plan to include tax relief for small business owners, access to low interest loans, actually usury. Interest rates are going to be a big thing going forward. You're not going to be able to get a loan at 35% just because your credit is poor, you know. He's thinking of expanding mentorship programs to help young entrepreneurs or new entrepreneurs succeed. He wants to simplify licensing requirements. And definitely, we all want this across the board, to reduce the bureaucratic hurdles, so that we can actually get in there and have a business, negotiate the legality of it without going bankrupt or insane. So definitely he's going to provide financial incentives for small business owners so that we can have the tools to reinvest in our businesses and maybe even expand, you know, our programs. He talks about tax cuts and reforms. Now, I won't go into this in great detail, but Trump has mentioned on several occasions that the IRS shouldn't be involved in the private small citizen's business. And being a private small citizen, I'm only 5 foot one, with a small business, I'm a one-man show. I resonate to that. Let's talk a little bit about deregulation, removing barriers to business. Excessive regulations have long hampered innovation and growth across all industries. So this agenda of Team Trump, it includes a thorough review of federal regulations, aiming to eliminate those that are outdated, redundant, or, I love this phrase, unnecessarily burdensome, which means we put it in just because we could. And that, my darlings, is how we grew the fourth branch of government, the bureaucracy, which certainly isn't in the Founding Fathers' plans. So we're going to be streamlining regulatory processes And as we do that, businesses will have the freedom to innovate and compete on whatever scale they want, global if necessary. And a key focus, of course, will be on energy, healthcare, and technology sectors, because these are industries vital to national security and economic resilience. And PG quite rightly points out that deregulation in these areas will unleash American potential while maintaining essential safeguards for safety and fairness. How will that impact us? How will that impact us, PG? Well, businesses will save billions in compliance costs, which can be reinvested in research. That's just cream that people are taking from us. Compliance costs. It's just money for a piece of paper. You know, we can reinvest that money in research, development, job creation, maybe buy some groceries at the end of the month, pay the PG&E bill. You know, a leaner regulatory framework will ensure that small businesses can thrive alongside corporate giants, fostering a diverse and robust economy. Oh, he talks a lot about reshoring manufacturing jobs, you know, the made in America renaissance. I love that. We're going to have a made in America renaissance. The globalists destroyed the steel industry in America. It destroyed the ability of a working man who was making $25 to $30 an hour to support an entire family whose wife did not have to work unless she wanted to work. And most were part-time teachers or whatever. You know, keeping the family together, it's really a big thing to have a family unit. I'll talk another time about feminism. You know, it was supposed to make women equal. Women are equal. A family unit does not depend on a hierarchy of who makes the money. If you get married, a man marries a woman, they decide to have children, whatever, you know, somebody has to stay home and raise those children. Just because the man is making the money, it doesn't mean he's the major shareholder. It's a shared job, a shared responsibility, a shared vision. We are going to have that come back in the States. We really are. We are going, the agenda for the Made in America Renaissance, it aims to reverse the outsourcing of our work. And it's going to offer tax incentives to companies to bring those jobs back into the US. And it will probably penalize those that move their production overseas. And this is the part that makes me very excited. I'm very excited right now. If you could see me, I am tingling with excitement. Let me have a drink. Let me have a drink. It'll calm me down. Hang on a minute, darlings. Let me have a little sippy poo of my drinky poo. Okay, this is the part that makes me excited. His Made in America Renaissance, it emphasizes investing in vocational training and infrastructure to support a skilled workforce. Our carpenters, our handymen, our landscapers, all of the artisanal stuff, you know, we don't need to outsource that. We don't need illegal immigrants for that. We don't need to bring in a foreign workforce to be our plumbers. We can do this ourselves. And if we can get people back into trade school, that means that we are self-reliant on creating and fixing our infrastructure. That is significant because it actually strengthens national security by reducing dependence on foreign supply chains. And lo and behold, here's a notion. It provides stable, high-paying jobs for American workers, ensuring that economic gains are shared widely across the population. PG also talks about energy independence, ending subsidies for renewables and prioritizing American resources. Again, energy independence is central to national security and economic growth. Why wouldn't we have a plan that proposes ending subsidies for renewable energy sources that have yet to prove economically viable while investing in American oil, gas, and coal industries. By prioritizing domestic energy production, the U.S. can reduce reliance on foreign sources and stabilize energy prices. And the agenda will also include funding for research into next-generation energy technologies, ensuring that we, the USA, huzzah, remain at the forefront of innovation. By balancing traditional and emerging energy sectors, the plan creates a comprehensive approach to energy security. Supporting energy independence also involves modernizing energy infrastructure. Ours is not modernized. And that includes the pipelines, by the way, and the power grids. Ooh, our power grids. Our power grids suck, people. You know, we need to ensure efficiency and resilience. And what have we got? Two power grids in Texas? And I think they're all on a hope and a prayer. So each of these economic reforms addresses critical weakness in America's current system while creating opportunities for long-term prosperity. Together, they form a comprehensive strategy to restore the nation's economic strength and ensure that every American has the tools and resources to succeed. We are going to have an America First agenda. We have it. And we are creating a Made in America Renaissance, my darlings. That is what we are doing. Now, what else can I talk about? Because there's a great many subjects here, but I want to talk a little bit about healthcare reimagined. Our healthcare system is not a healthcare system. It is a sickness care system. It is a, is cash cow the correct term? It is a money making operation for the cabal. Destroying our souls from within. This is me, by the way, this isn't PG. Destroying our souls from within by building these amazing hospitals, all of which are palaces of the pain and the sickness that we have been so indoctrinated to worship and identify with. One of the most persistent challenges in the American healthcare system actually is the lack of transparency in pricing. PG carries on, patients often face unpredictable and exorbitant medical bills, leaving families financially strained. And this plan aims to address the issue by mandating clear and upfront disclosure of healthcare costs by providers, insurance, and pharmaceutical companies. Because greater transparency ensures that patients can make informed decisions about their care, fostering trust in the system and enabling fair competition. Hospitals and clinics will be required to publish the prices of common procedures, while insurance companies must provide detailed cost breakdowns for covered services. And the pharmaceutical companies will face much stricter requirements to disclose drug development costs and pricing methodologies. And this will ensure medications are priced fairly. And to enforce compliance, a federal oversight body will monitor pricing practices and penalize entities that fail to meet transparency standards. Is this important? Yes, transparency is the first step towards fairness. When the patients can compare costs and understand their options, they gain control over their healthcare decisions. This policy will foster competition among providers, driving down prices, improving the quality of care. Additionally, it ensures that healthcare becomes more predictable and accessible for all Americans. So we need to improve access to care. It is a very embarrassing thing that many seniors, even if they're offered Medicare, can't afford the extra $200-$250 a month that it costs to insure them. And medical insurance for an older person who's self-employed like myself is exorbitant. It's beyond my reach. So we are going to improve access to care. There will be enhanced funding for community health centers, because we do need more localized, affordable care. It's very important to reduce the strain on emergency rooms and major hospitals. Preventative care. We need to move into that. We need to expand our access to good healthcare. We also need to reduce the prescription drug costs. They are ridiculous because the cost of prescription drugs in the United States, as stated by PG, and he's correct, remains pretty much about the highest in the world. How do we lower drug prices? Well, we allow the importation of safe and affordable medications from other countries. Capping out-of-pocket expenses for seniors, fostering competition by promoting the use of generic drugs. Now, these efforts aim to make life-saving medications more accessible while maintaining incentives for innovation. See, negotiating drug prices directly with pharmaceutical companies for Medicare and Medicaid is the cornerstone of this plan. By leveraging the government's purchasing power, the proposal ensures that prescription drugs are priced competitively without compromising quality or availability. And additionally, yes, there's more, stricter regulations on drug price increases will prevent sudden and unjustified hikes, protecting consumers from the all too common price gouging. Does it matter? Yes, of course it matters. Because high drug prices force Americans to choose between their health and other essential expenses. A proposal such as this one ensures that no one has to make that choice, while encouraging innovation and competition in the pharmaceutical industry. So we have to lower drug costs. It will improve overall healthcare, and it will benefit everybody. This is just so ridiculous, you know, that you don't have insurance and then you have a heart attack and you get a bill of $260,000. If you can't afford the insurance, how the flippity-gibbet are you supposed to afford $260,000? So we need to massively streamline the administrative processes and replace that dreadful Affordable Care Act. Let's take a look at some decent market-driven solutions. We have to invest more in preventative care and wellness. And here's something very important, because we are living in a world full of mad people. One way or the other, people are feeble-minded, you're gullible. If you believe what's on the news, you've lost control of your mind. You are gullible. You now have a mental health issue because you believe an image, which may or may not be AI, on a box that's being transmitted to you, and you take that as gospel. So we need to enhance mental health services, is what I'm saying. A critical component of overall well-being. Yet, as PG quite rightly points out, it remains underfunded and stigmatized. The agenda prioritizes expanding access to mental health care by increasing funding for community-based services, integrating mental health care into primary care settings, and enhancing training programs for mental health professionals. And these efforts, they aim to close the gaps in the system and provide comprehensive care for all. I really do think that mental health should be put into a primary care setting, because you're never just physically ill or just mentally ill. All illness starts in the mind anyway. And I have known clients personally who have been told they're getting dementia, that they're getting forgetful, that they need to be put into a home. And what they had was a food allergy, a very serious food allergy. And once that was identified and taken away, they got their brains back. There are people spending millions on healthcare that they don't need because they have not been properly diagnosed. It's really essential that we address mental health. We need a healthy society. We need a more resilient society. We need a sovereign, self-realized society. We can't all be bloody mad, you know? We must ensure that every American has the care they need. And this is doable. You don't necessarily need socialized medicine. We just have to go about it a different way. We really need a transformative vision for healthcare, addressing critical pain points while empowering patients and providers alike. So many doctors want to do their job, but they can't do it properly because they're in the system. My doctor left the system when all this COVID shit started because they saw through it, went into private practice, which financially doesn't really do very well. But there's such a thing as honor and integrity towards your patients, and I respect that. As PG quite beautifully states, and I love the way he writes, his army, or maybe he's another, his military, let's put it that way. I don't know what branch he came from, but he's to the point. There's not one word extra, and I love that. By reimagining healthcare delivery and prioritizing preventative care, this agenda ensures a healthier and more equitable future for all Americans. And with that, I will stop on the America First agenda just for the day. I think I'm probably going to do three or four of these and address everything in Trump's comprehensive plan to restore leadership. And I'll probably do that as American civics and history in the podcasts going forward until we have covered all of those points. I just want to say, my darlings, I wake up every morning these days with an unshakable sense of optimism. I'm excited. I get up in the morning, I do what we all do in the mornings. I have a pee, brush my teeth, wash my face, all of that, have a quick shower, get a cup of coffee, and then I sit down and I do my little 20-minute meditation. But after that, I'm champing at the bit to go to my laptop and see what Team Trump is up to that day and what is shifting in the world. Because from my point of view, I get the big picture. I don't pretend to know what's true, what's woo, and what gets flushed down the loo, because all sides are presenting swarms of multiple narratives. Although I do have to say that the deep state has lost its ability to swarm. I think they're holding on to a couple of threads and banging those home, just like a sailor bangs after 9 months of being at sea and not having had a poke. That's what they're all about right now. I want you not to get bogged down in the television media's narrative. You see, do we really know that people are being bombed, selectively or otherwise? Because most of us are just taking a look at images, which may or may not be AI, on our little YouTube channels, our Rumble channels, our Telegram channels. You don't even know. Is it AI? Is it real? Are these things really happening? Can you call your friends in Tehran? I can, and see what's going on. Why did friends of mine actually send holiday pictures from the Wailing Wall? Was it 5 or 6 days ago? Everything seemed to be rather fine there in Jerusalem. You see, what I'm trying to say is we don't really know here in America what is playing out. What we do know is that there is a 100D chess game going on. I have to say this, you have to say that. I have to do this, I have to complain. I have to pretend that one of my people is in opposition to me. That's a controlled opposition. Then you do this and you do this. And there's all these moves, all in honor of waking up a gullible, feeble-minded, somewhat clueless population of matrix dwellers. This is all to wake you all up. Don't buy into it. Step back as you look at it and think to yourself, what is the point of all this? And I'll tell you what the point of all of this is. The Trump administration is about peace, prosperity. Why go to war when you can all live in peace and have wonderful trade and thrive, and everybody has money and everybody buys groceries and everybody has ice cream on Sunday afternoons? That really is what it's all about. We don't have to be isolationists if we all respect each other's sovereignty. I can guarantee that people will return to their own countries because sovereignty is a bug that once it bites you, you are going to want to do the very best thing you can for your country. For those who have come legally here to America, like me, jumped through the hoops, paid the money and all of that, spend every day thinking, what can we give back to this country? This is your country now. This is where your sovereignty is. This is where your sense of sovereignty thrives. This is the country that we support. But I guarantee you that millions of people will return to the Near East and the Middle East and Africa and build their countries, because the fourth dimension is lapping at our shores of mankind's psyche. And that means that we all understand what we are and what our path is. Suddenly, clarity, da-da! Like in the movies when a great beam of light comes down from the heavens, da-da! And we all get to figure it out. Darlings, a quick plug, if I may, go to my website, www.aniabedisian.com. Take a look at my services and book some and make my landlord happy. I would also like to say that I will be co-hosting a four-day retreat in September with the author of the Billionaire series, Petra Nicole. And this will be in Woodland, Washington, on the beautiful Lewis River. There'll be yoga, there'll be meditations, there'll be all sorts of chi machines and PEMF machines. And my part in it is going to be, I'm going to teach paranormal to paranoia. I'm going to teach you all about paranormal activity so that you are ready for the fourth dimension, because cultural exchange centers of extraterrestrials will actually be here in our lifetime. So I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to be giving a spiritual salon, which is not where you talk to the dead. A spiritual salon with me is a conversation. You bring all your questions about metaphysics, life, the universe, and everything, all the things you were too embarrassed to ask your pastor or your teacher or your spouse or whatever. And we talk about all of that. And I'm also going to be teaching self-development through my Tarot A Go Go class, a four-hour workshop, a little shenanigana with the major arcana. And that is going to be just fabulous. So if you want clarity with a very good dose of hilarity, go to my Facebook page or go to Petra Nicole's Facebook page and take a look at this wonderful. I'm really looking forward to this retreat. It literally is right on the Lewis River. And we're all going to go into the river, those of us who are feeling hardy, and have a dip in that river. A nice little cold plunge. What else do I have to say? Probably not a lot. I'm probably coming close to the hour. And I'd like to say, darlings, my sweet darlings, I think we've done it. I have finished my drink. Yes, I did. And that always means the end of the show. Now, I hope you enjoyed listening in as much as I enjoyed recording it, because I had a blast. I always do. Why wouldn't I? Hanging out with you martini heads every other week is honestly the highlight of my sad and sorry life, and I do so look forward to it. Today's real life cocktail was a classic from the old Mr. Boston Deluxe Official Bartender's Guide. And I chose a bourbon-based cocktail today because, heck, this is America, and we make the best damn bourbon on the planet. Today's cocktail is a vintage, and it's called a Brown Derby, and here's how you make it. And my partner says, for heaven's sake, don't call it a derby. You're in America now. So it's a Brown Derby, and what you do is you take 2 ounces of a bourbon. I use Maker's Mark, but you can use any bourbon. 1 ounce of fresh grapefruit juice. I don't really like grapefruit juice, so that was interesting. And then 1/2 ounce of honey syrup. Easy to make, honey syrup. You put those in a shaker with cracked ice and shakey, shakey. Give it a good hard shake, you know? And then strain it into a coupe glass. Garnish with a candied grapefruit wedge. And sip. It's really quite delicious. I was surprised. Now remember, folks, cocktails are great if they are an occasional treat. If you use top shelf ingredients and take the art of mixology seriously, one drink is all you need. And cheers to Mystical Wares in Mount Vernon, Washington, for kindly arranging the intergalactic distribution of this show. Mysticalwares.com. Online or on location, you'll be sure to give them a standing ovation. Huzzah for Mystical Wares! Huzzah! Not only do they have a fine line of all items metaphysical, they also have a humongous selection of shungite. And of course, the owner, Derek Condit, is a superlative energy worker who is also a bee whisperer. So go to mysticalwares.com and learn all about it. I'm Ani, mad as the day is long, Abadissian. This was a metaphysical martini produced by Cosmic Reality Radio, to whom we are most grateful. If I have offended anyone today, oh, get over it. Have a drink, get over it. Until we meet again, don't allow yourself to be distracted by the machine. Stay factual and stay clean. And the best way to do that, my darlings, is to let the spirit inhabit the human.
You have been listening to The Metaphysical Martini with Ani Apodisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.